Welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha, a podcast shared by David Roylance. This podcast is dedicated to guiding you to completely eliminate the discontent mind and the suffering it causes by attaining enlightenment. Learn and practice the teachings of Gautama Buddha that will guide you to fully attain a peaceful, calm, serene, and content mind with joy. To support this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha or visit buddhadailywisdom.com, where you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online learning resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Now, here's our teacher to share more.
Sawadee krap. Hello and welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha. Today is our Pali Canon and English study group where we're studying the words of the Buddha in this book series titled The Words of the Buddha, The Path to Enlightenment, Revealing the Hidden. We're in volume 11, which is titled The Realms of Existence, and we're going to be studying chapters 111 through 120 today. You can access these books from our website, which is buddhadailywisdom.com, and from there you'll see the link for free books. You'll have the entire book series of 13 books that are all based in the original words of the Buddha to help you progress towards this enlightened mental state where the mind can be peaceful, calm, serene, and content with joy. So I'd like to welcome all of you that are joining for our class, whether you're joining for the first time live through Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom, or if you're listening to this on the replay through any of the platforms that we distribute content to, like the podcast and other places like this. So welcome to all of you guys. What I'm going to be doing is displaying the chapters that we're going to be studying today so that somebody can read these chapters. If someone in Zoom would like to volunteer, they're welcome to. Otherwise, I'll just read each of the chapters. Then what we'll do is I'll share some teachings on that chapter, and then I'll open up to any and all questions that you guys have. If you're in Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom, you can ask questions by putting that into the comment section, or you can raise your hand in Zoom electronically and ask any questions that you like. So here, this first chapter that we're studying today, chapter 111, is titled The Mother's Milk. These chapters that we're going to be studying mostly today are about the cycle of rebirth, because this Realms of Existence, volume 11, we've already explored the hell realm, the animal realm, the afflicted spirits, the human realm, and the heavenly realm. And now we've been studying some chapters related to the cycle of rebirth itself. And this is something that can be independently verified. In terms of the teachings of the Buddha, there's nothing that's based in belief. Even the cycle of rebirth and all the realms, all of this is independently verifiable. You may not have the wisdom of how to verify that at this point, but if you dive deeper into the practice, you can learn about how to independently verify the cycle of rebirth and the realms of existence. Because the Buddha is explaining the way that the world is. He's not explaining the way the world should be, or the way that he thinks the world is, or the way that he believes the world is. He's not giving you a bunch of rules and commandments about if everybody follows these rules and commandments, the world becomes peaceful. He's explaining to you the way the world is based on his own direct experience. And because he observed that truth for himself, you can then also independently verify that truth and see it for yourself. And ultimately, a student who independently verifies the cycle of rebirth based on the wisdom of how to do that, you're usually about a year and a half, 2 years into your development, potentially, on the path to enlightenment, where initially you're learning things like the three universal truths, the four noble truths, the eightfold path. You're developing your meditation training and all these different things that you're working towards. And this is what's going to help awaken your mind by eliminating certain pollutions out of the mind, moving closer and closer to that peace and joy, and experiencing the focus and concentration and all the other benefits on the path to enlightenment. And as you're doing this and you're lifting the pollution out of the mind, it's not uncommon for somebody to be able to observe their past lives and start having memories from their past lives, or to experience communication with beings from these five realms. Or you might even be able to start seeing these beings in one of these five realms. And if this is occurring and you didn't understand the way the world is, it could really shake you up. So the Buddha is teaching you the cycle of rebirth and the five realms of existence for a reason, so that you understand the way the world is, so that as you're learning his core central teachings and you're starting to lift that pollution out of the mind, if you start having observance of past lives, if you have communication communication with beings in any of those five realms, if you are experiencing seeing beings like from the hell realm or afflicted spirits or heavenly realm, then you'll know exactly what's happening and you'll know why, because the Buddhist teachings explain that to you. So here, when you're learning about these things, you're never interested in believing anything, but you're learning, reflecting to independently verify and practice. And oftentimes people will approach this much later in their development on the path to enlightenment, because what's happened in the past is in the past. It doesn't matter anymore. And what may or may not happen in the future, it's in the future. Right now, you're in the human realm with an opportunity to make your way closer and closer to enlightenment. So it's best to not be complacent in that. So here, this first chapter that we're studying today, the mother's milk. Monks, this cycle of rebirth is without discoverable beginning. A first point is not identifiable of beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance, unknowing of true reality, and fettered by craving. What do you think, monks, which is more, the mother's milk that you have drunk as you roamed and wandered on through this long course, this, or the water in the four great oceans? As we understand the teachings taught by the perfectly enlightened one, Venerable Sir, the mother's milk that we have drunk as we roamed and wandered on through this long course, this alone is more than the water in the four great oceans. Good, good, monks. It is good that you understand the teachings taught by me in such a way. The mother's milk that you have drunk as you roamed and wandered through this long course, this alone is more than the water in the four great oceans. For what reason? Because, monks, this cycle of rebirth is without discoverable beginning. A first point is not identifiable of beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance, unknowing of true reality, and fettered by craving. For such a long time, monks, you have experienced discontentedness, misery and disaster, and swell the cemetery. It is enough to experience fading away of strong feelings towards all conditions, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. Okay, so what the Buddha is teaching here is how you've had countless rebirths. You may not be able to remember all of those right now, but you might have had something like deja vu, where these residual memories are kind of surfacing to the front of the mind, where oftentimes when those kinds of things happen, you might just push them to the side and not really pay attention to them. What deja vu is where you're experiencing something now in this life, and you know it's utterly familiar to you, and you know you've done this before, but it wasn't in this life. And this can last for a few seconds or 10 or 12 seconds, but usually what people do is just push that to the side. But you've had these countless rebirths. The scientists tell us that to their best estimate, the planet has been here for 4.5 billion years. And of course, some scientists date that a little bit earlier, a little bit later, but 4.5 billion years is about the average of what scientists think the planet has been here for. We can't even fathom that amount of time, the 4.5 billion years. You know, we're on this planet for maybe 60 to 100 years. That's such a blink of an eye compared to the real history of this planet. And there's been beings on this planet at different times all throughout the history of this planet. So beings have been constantly reborn over and over and over and over and over again. And the Buddha is saying that the beginning of the cycle of rebirth, not the beginning of the earth and when the earth started, but when the beginning of this whole cycle of rebirth started, is undiscoverable. And why this is really helpful for you is because oftentimes in the human realm, the human mind is always obsessed with potentially thinking about, well, how did the world start? When did it start? How did it start? What happened? All these different things, and having almost craving or an obsession to figure out what happened in the past. Where in reality, what the Buddha is teaching you to do is come into the present moment and realize that you're a human being now, and that your mind is discontent now. And the teachings that are going to help you eliminate that discontentedness and escape this cycle of rebirth are here for you right now to be able to learn and understand. But it's because of ignorance that the mind is hindered in continuing to roam and wander throughout this long course of the cycle of rebirth. What ignorance is the unknowing of true reality, that the mind just doesn't understand what it doesn't understand. In the unenlightened state, the mind doesn't understand what's causing the sadness and anger and frustration and all these other discontent feelings. The unenlightened mind will tend to blame this on other beings and think that your mom is causing you to be upset, or your dad, or your brothers or sisters or life partner, your children. That's not what's causing the discontent feelings. It's actually being caused by this craving. So with the mind having this lack of wisdom or this unknowing of true reality, this confusion or delusion, then craving continues to exist in the mind. This is the longing, yearning, the craving, desire, attachment, wants, and expectations, where if the unenlightened mind gets what it wants, it gets pleasant feelings like happiness, excitement, elation, thrill, exhilaration, euphoria. And then if it doesn't get what it wants, it gets those painful feelings like sadness, anger, frustration, irritation, annoyance, guilt, shame, fear, stress, anxiety, and others. So these are very painful to experience, and it's all coming from the mind's craving. The Buddha describes it as a fetter because a fetter was a shackle, a chain, and a ball that would keep a prisoner trapped in a particular area and keep it confined to a particular area. Rather than being in a jail cell, you would have this fetter around your leg. Well, there's these 10 fetters that the Buddha discovered, which are the 10 pollutions or the 10 taints. And this is what's keeping the mind trapped in the unenlightened state, where it's not able to experience the brightness and the radiance and the joy of the enlightened mind, where you can be happy and joyful all the time, unconditioned joy, unconditioned happiness. So the Buddha here is using this analogy of whether what is more, all the milk that you've drank and all your previous existences, or all the water in the four great oceans, right? They understood four great oceans back then. So if you've ever looked around the planet, or if you've been out on the sea, or you've done scuba diving and you've seen all the massive amount of water that is on this planet, I think 70 or 80% of the water is or 70 or 80% of the planet is actually water. So if you know how voluminous the water is on this planet, what the Buddha is saying is that the milk that you've drank in all your previous existences added together is more voluminous than all of that water. So there you can see that what he's describing is just a countless number of rebirths. And as you are roaming and wandering, you're continuing to experience the sorrow and the sadness and the grief and the despair. So since this beginning of the cycle of rebirth is undiscoverable and you've had these countless rebirths, what the Buddha is encouraging you to do is focus with dedication, diligence, and determination to be able to focus on getting to enlightenment. What he's saying is it's enough to experience fading away of strong feelings towards all conditions, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. What he's saying is, you know, why continue in this cycle of rebirth, continuing to experience the discontentedness and the misery and the disaster over and over and over again? You would be completely satisfied and fully fulfilled with getting to this enlightened mental state where the mind's peaceful and joyful, that there's nothing that the mind wants, so to speak, this longing, yearning, that you have what you need in life. You're not just chasing after these obsessions that the mind often has. But because beings don't understand that peace and that joy of the enlightened mind, and they don't have the wisdom to understand what's actually causing their discontent feelings, beings just crave and crave and crave and crave and crave and crave and just keep chasing after all these impermanent things that aren't going to provide lasting satisfaction. So here, this is the Buddha explaining the countless rebirths and how the mind is hindered by this unknowing of true reality, and it's fettered by this craving. It's being held back and obstructed by this craving. That's why it can't experience the peace and the joy of the enlightened mind. So let me know what questions you guys have here. You can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom, or you can raise your hand in Zoom and ask any questions that you like. Okay, it looks like Mayuli's asking a question here. Sir, if the beginning of rebirth is undiscoverable, what are your thoughts of God creating living beings? If the first point is not identified, then why did the concept of God creating all beings come from? So what the Buddha is saying is like a time frame of when the cycle of rebirth started is undiscoverable. He gives a creation story in his teachings, and he even talks about God as being the creator. So it's not that that is not undiscoverable. It's that the time frame of when it happened. So while we say the Earth has generally started around 4.5 billion years ago, that doesn't give an exact number. That doesn't say all the other beings throughout the universe or the galaxy, because oftentimes here on Earth, we think that Earth is it and everybody on Earth, that's the only thing. But we can't be the only beings in this world, so to speak, in this universe and multiple universes all throughout the world, that we can't be the only ones. So the beginning in terms of the time frame is undiscoverable. So we're saying that you've had these countless rebirths over this enormous amount of time that is undiscoverable. Okay, not seeing any other questions anywhere. So let's go to the next one, which is chapter 112. This one is titled, In Misfortune, In Misery, In This Long Course. Monks, this cycle of rebirth is without discoverable beginning. A first point is not identifiable of beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance, unknowing of true reality, and fettered by craving. Whenever you see anyone in misfortune, in misery, you can conclude, we too have experienced the same thing in this long course. For what reason? Because, monks, this cycle of rebirth is without discoverable beginning. A first point is not identifiable of beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance, unknowing of true reality, and fettered by craving. For such a long time, monks, you have experienced discontentedness, misery, and disaster, and swelled the cemetery. It is enough to experience fading away of strong feelings towards all conditions, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. Okay, this teaching is actually really good to help you arise compassion and to also eliminate any kind of conceits or arrogance or judging other beings and looking down on them. Here, what the Buddha is saying is you've been reborn countless times. And because of that, whenever you see an individual that is experiencing misfortune or misery, you can conclude that we too have experienced the same thing in this long course. So if you see somebody that's using drugs or alcohol, if you're looking down on them and you're judging them, instead, what you can do is you can arise this compassion, which is the concern for the misfortune, realizing that you have done those same things, either in this life or some previous life. If you see somebody that is experiencing homelessness or difficult struggles or poverty or something like this, you can conclude that you too have experienced this exact same thing. So rather than judge them and look down on them for any kind of unwise decisions that someone might be making, instead have concern for their misfortune. So this will really help you to bring down your judgment of others, bringing down that conceit, that arrogance, that pride, and rising up your compassion, because you can put yourself in that same situation. If you see someone sleeping on the side of the street, you can say and understand in your own mind that, hey, you've done this exact same thing in the past. This is so unfortunate that this being is in this situation, that you've experienced that too. So this can help you to arise the concern for the misfortune of others. And here the Buddha is explaining all the same stuff that, hey, you've experienced so much misfortune in the past through all this countless rebirths. It's enough to get to enlightenment. By you getting to enlightenment, then you'll be fully satisfied, fully fulfilled. Like, you've done all this misery, you've experienced all this sorrow and this sadness. It's time to get out of the cycle of rebirth and end all of it. So let me know what questions you guys have here. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. So this next one is very similar to that one. It's exactly the same words, except for right here, it's a little bit different. So the title here is In Happiness and Fortune in This Long Course. And it's all the same stuff, but what he's saying is, whenever you see anyone happy and fortunate, you can conclude we too have experienced the same thing in this long course. So what this can do for you is this can help you to eliminate your craving, desire, attachment, and any kind of jealousy or envy that you might have. If you see somebody that's rich or famous or experiencing any fortunate situation, you can conclude you've already done that. You've already been there. You've already done that. Sometimes when you see somebody having a great job title, or they're really handsome or really beautiful, or maybe they're driving a Lamborghini or Ferrari, and you're like, ah, oh, I wish I could have that. I want that so badly. You can have craving, and then you can have jealousy and envy as well. And what you can do is you can remind yourself, hey, I've already experienced that. I've already done that. So why do I need to do that again? I've already experienced it. You can let go and just realize, like, okay, I need to get content and peaceful and joyful in this present existence and where I am in life and continuing to build my life. But I don't need to long and yearn for fame or fortune or some other thing that somebody else is having. It's not about, you know, other people are here and you're just chasing to be there, right? There can only be one person who's the richest person in the world, and why keep chasing after that? Instead, realize that any kind of happiness or fortunate thing, those things don't necessarily lead to happiness, right? Like, if money and wealth and fame and fortune led to happiness, then you would never see any wealthy person or any famous person commit suicide. Because if money and celebrity fame led to happiness, then nobody in that particular or experiencing that particular thing would ever commit suicide. But we see that people who are rich and wealthy and famous and have celebrity status, they commit suicide. So that means that they're experiencing painful feelings. That's because the craving, desire, attachment is still in the mind. So oftentimes, the way that we're taught is to chase after wealth or chase after prestige or chase after fame or things like this. But none of that's going to lead to your ultimate peacefulness and your ultimate joy where it can be permanent. So you may be famous, or you may end up being famous at some point, but that isn't what's going to produce the peace and the joy. And if you see anybody else that's experiencing that, you can conclude that you too have experienced that at some point in your life. So this will help you eliminate craving and eliminate any jealousy or envy that might be arising. So let me know what questions you guys have on this one. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions here. So let's go to the next one. This is chapter 114. This one is very similar to what we've seen before too, but the Buddha's going to use a different analogy here. It's titled The Stream of Blood. Monks, this cycle of rebirth is without discoverable beginning. A first point is not identifiable of beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance, unknowing of true reality, and fettered by craving. What do you think, monks, which is more? The stream of blood that you have shed when you were beheaded as you roamed and wandered on through this long course, this, or the water in the four great oceans? As we understand the teachings taught by the perfectly enlightened one, venerable sir, the stream of blood that we have shed when our heads were cut off as we roamed and wandered on through this long course, this alone is more than the water in the four great oceans. Good, good, monks. It is good that you understand the teachings taught by me in such a way. The stream of blood that you have shed as you roamed and wandered on through this long course, this alone is more than the water in the four great oceans. For a long time, monks, you have been cows, and when as cows you were beheaded, the stream of blood that you shed is greater than the waters in the four great oceans. For a long time, you have been buffalo, sheep, goats, deer, chickens, and pigs. You were beheaded. The stream of blood that you shed is greater than the waters in the four great oceans. For a long time, you have been arrested as burglars, highwaymen, and adulterers. And when you were beheaded, the stream of blood that you shed is greater than the water in the four great oceans. For what reason? Because, monks, this cycle of rebirth is without discoverable beginning. A first point is not identifiable of beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance, unknowing of true reality, and fettered by craving. For such a long time, monks, you have experienced discontentedness, misery, and disaster, and swelled the cemetery. It is enough to experience fading away of strong feelings towards all conditions, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. Okay, so here the Buddha's giving you another analogy where first it was the mother's milk that he was talking about, comparison to all the water and all the seas, but now he's using the blood. that the blood that you had in these previous existences as animals and humans, the Buddha saying that volume is more than all the water and all the seas. This is just countless, 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 countless rebirths. So this can help you to understand how many countless rebirths you had, but also this can help you arise loving kindness and compassion for animals. Because when cows are being killed, when other animals are being killed in order to feed an individual who might be eating animal flesh, then this could have very well been you or some other being that you know that has been reborn into those realms. And then when you see people that are breaking the law, the Buddha saying, hey, you've done the same thing in the past and you were beheaded during that time frame and you've had these countless, countless rebirths. And then of course, what he's ultimately getting to is focus on getting to enlightenment. That's where the real satisfaction is. That's where the real fulfillment is. So let me know what questions you guys have on this chapter. You can put it into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom, or you can raise your hand in Zoom and ask any questions that you like. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. So I'm going to move on to the next chapter, which this is chapter 115. Beings roaming and wandering on from this world to the other world and from the other world to this world. Monks, this cycle of rebirth is without discoverable beginning. A first point is not identifiable of beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance, unknowing of true reality, and fettered by craving. Just as a stick thrown up into the air falls now on its bottom, now on its side, and now on its top, so too, as beings roam and wander on, hindered by ignorance, unknowing of true reality, and fettered by craving. Now they go from this world to the other world. Now they come from the other world to this world. For what reason? Because, monks, this cycle of rebirth is without discoverable beginning. A first point is not identifiable of beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance, unknowing of true reality, and fettered by craving. For such a long time, monks, you have experienced discontentedness, misery, and disaster, and swelled the cemetery. It is enough to experience fading away of strong feelings towards all conditions, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. So here the Buddha is talking about beings leaving from the human world and moving into the other realms, and from those realms coming into this realm. And this is because of the ignorance or the unknowing of true reality and the craving. That's why everything on the path to enlightenment is about cultivating wisdom so you can antidote that ignorance. That's what's going to help you eradicate the craving, desire, attachments, and all the other pollutions of mind that are hindering one from being able to experience the peace and the joy and the liberation of mind. So here, this is another chapter essentially describing the same things. Now, keep in mind that all these discourses, the Buddha wasn't speaking about these one after another after another. You know, over his 45-year teaching career, he would have said one discourse in one place, another discourse in another place, and another place. Here, this book series is putting them all together and consolidating them. So you can see what he's talking about in relationship to various topics so that they're not spread out over all the different books related to the Pali Canon, but instead it's consolidating them. But he would have shared these at different times in different settings, helping people to understand how they are experiencing countless rebirths. So let me know if you guys have any questions on this one. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions here. So let's move on to 116. So now the Buddha is going to move into talking about impermanence a little bit. So impermanent, so unstable, so unreliable conditions. Monks, this cycle of rebirth is without discoverable beginning. A first point is not identifiable of beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance, unknowing of true reality, and fettered by craving. In the past, monks, this Mount Vapula was called something else. I can't pronounce these long words. And at that time, these people were called Tavasas. The lifespan of the Tavasas was 40,000 years. They could climb Mount Pachacamaramasa in 4 days and descended in 4 days. At that time, the perfectly enlightened one, Kakasanaha, an arahant, a perfectly enlightened one, had arisen in the world. His two chief disciples were named Vadahara and Sanjiva, an excellent pair. Sea monks, that name for this mountain has disappeared. Those people have died, and that fortunate one has attained final nibbana, final enlightenment. So impermanent are conditions, monks, so unstable, so unreliable. It is enough, monks, to experience fading away of strong feelings towards all conditions, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. At another time in the past, monks, this Mount Vapula was called Vankaka, and at that time these people were called Rohitahasan. The lifespan of the Rohitahasa was 30,000 years. They could climb Mount Vankaka in 3 days and descend in 3 days. At that time, the perfectly enlightened one, with this name, another very long name, I can't pronounce any of these, an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one, had arisen in the world. His two chief disciples were named Bayahasa and Yutara, an excellent pair. Sea monks, that name for this mountain has disappeared. Those people have died, and that fortunate one has attained final nibbana, final enlightenment. So impermanent are conditions, monks, so unstable, so unreliable. It is enough, monks, to experience fading away of strong feelings towards all conditions, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. At still another time in the past, monks, this Mount Vapula was called Supasa, and at that time these people were called Supayas. The lifespan of the Supayas was 20,000 years. They could climb Mount Supasa in 2 days and descend in 2 days. At that time, the perfectly enlightened one, Kasapa, an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one, had arisen in the world. His two chief disciples were named Tassa and Barahatvaja, an excellent pair. Sea monks, that name for this mountain has disappeared. Those people have died, and the fortunate one has attained final nibbana, final enlightenment. So impermanent are conditions, monks, so unstable, so unreliable. It is enough, monks, to experience fading away of strong feelings towards all conditions, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. At present, monks, this Mount Vupala is called Vapula, and at present, these people are called Magahans. The lifespan of the Magahanas is short, limited, fleeting. One who lives long lives 100 years or a little more. The Magahans climb Mount Vupala in an hour and descend in an hour. At present, I have arisen in the world, an Arahant, a perfectly enlightened one. My two chief disciples are named Sariputta and Mangalana, an excellent pair. There will come a time, monks, when the name for this mountain will have disappeared, when these people will have died, and I will have attained final nibbana, final enlightenment. So impermanent are conditions, monks, so unstable, so unreliable. It is enough, monks, to experience fading away of strong feelings towards all conditions, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. This is what the perfectly enlightened one said. Having said this, the fortunate one, the teacher, further said this. This was called Pakasanasam by the Tavaras and Vankaka by the Rohasas, Supasa by the Supanaya people, Vupala by the Magaha folk. Impermanent, are conditions, subject to arising and vanishing. Having arisen, they are eliminated. Their calming is peaceful. Okay, so this is a very interesting discourse because this is one of the one conflicts that I've seen in the Pali Canon. I've read a significant portion of the Pali Canon, but I haven't seen any conflicts in the entire Pali Canon in terms of the teachings and what's being shared. There's only one conflict that I've seen, which is to be understood because the Buddha spoke over 2,500 years ago in an oral tradition. They wrote his teachings down shortly thereafter, and they've been handed down from generation to generation for 2,500 years. So for one conflict to slip into the Pali Canon, pretty miraculous that people have really preserved it in quite a pristine condition. But this is the one conflict that I've seen where here the Buddha is documented in other places as well, documented as having talked about Buddhas that existed before him. And then there's one place in the Pali Canon where you can see the Buddha talking about how he's the discoverer, the declarer, the originator of the path to enlightenment, undeclared before him. And I tend to think that that's actually what's true, that the Buddha was the first Buddha and it was undeclared and undiscovered before him. Because the more you learn about the path to enlightenment, you will see that it takes a deep level of intellectual learning and understanding to be able to get to enlightenment. And that means that human beings would need to have a well-structured language that can communicate very deep thoughts and very penetrating wisdom to be able to explain the path to enlightenment. In 2,500 years ago, in my opinion, language had evolved to that point where people could communicate in such an intellectual way that 5,000, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, however many years ago, it wasn't possible for people to talk in that level of depth that the Buddha talked during his life and that we can talk now with very intricate and accurate words, very clear, very concise, and very precise. So I suspect prior to the lifetime of Gautama Buddha, human language hadn't developed and evolved enough to the point where somebody could arise as a perfectly enlightened one and explain the teachings in such a way that would help a being to be able to experience the enlightened mind. There was a period of time where human beings were just moaning and grunting to each other that we hadn't formed oral communication yet. So whether there were Buddhas before Gautama Buddha or not, it doesn't really matter at this point because you're in the human condition, you have the ability to get to enlightenment, we have the teachings of the Buddha, and whether there were Buddhas before him or not, it really doesn't matter. The fact is that now it's important to learn and grow and develop and become enlightened in this life. So here the Buddha is using various examples to show this impermanence, that all these things around you are impermanent. This is where I talk, when I teach the universal truth of impermanence, I might talk about the body being impermanent, your bank account being impermanent, your relationships, the weather, the sidewalk. I describe all these different things to help you be able to independently verify that yes, all these things are impermanent. And here's the Buddha giving examples, potentially, if this documentation is accurate at all, of him giving examples of all these different things that are impermanent. Because the underlying problem that's happening with the unenlightened mind is that it craves permanence. It wants things to be permanent, but yet it lives in this impermanent world. The unenlightened mind is constantly craving permanence over and over and over and over and over again, but yet everything around you is impermanent. And that's part of the ignorance or the unknowing of true reality that the mind has, is that it lacks wisdom of this world around you, understanding the universal truth of impermanence. That would be the wisdom that you need along with other wisdom to get to the enlightened mental state. But instead of having wisdom, the mind has this unknowing of true reality or this ignorance, and it's having this craving for permanence, wanting things to be permanent. And as long as the mind gets what it wants, it gets pleasant feelings like happiness, excitement, elation. But those feelings are based on some condition. Whereas if it's sunny outside, you might get happy. But then that happiness is temporary because as soon as the sun changes, the mind moves into the sadness or the anger, the frustration, or some other discontent feeling because it can't experience the sun permanently because the sun is impermanent. So as long as the mind has craving and it latches on to something, the sun, your bank account, or any other thing or relationship, when this is over and ends because of impermanence, your mind will be discontent. So you need to train the mind to be comfortable with impermanence. And one of the first steps of that is to intellectually be able to look around the world and see that everything that's around you is all impermanent, so that then you can gradually be training the mind on the path to enlightenment to not crave permanence and be able to be comfortable with impermanence. And when you can train your mind to be comfortable with impermanence, then you ultimately get what the mind always wanted, which is something that's permanent. That's enlightenment, that you'll eventually get to that permanent mental state where the mind's permanently joyful and permanently peaceful. But you need to get comfortable with the impermanence first and train the mind to not crave permanence so that then it can move into that permanent mental state of enlightenment. So let me know what questions you guys have here. Again, you can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom, or you can raise your hand in Zoom and ask any questions that you like. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. So we'll move on to the next chapter, which is chapter 117. This one is titled, Conditioned Objects Are Impermanent. Monks, conditioned objects are impermanent. Conditioned objects are unstable. Conditioned objects are unreliable. It is enough to become dissatisfied with all conditioned objects, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. Monks, Suneru, the king of mountains, is 84,000 yojanas in length. A yojana is 12 to 15 kilometers. And 84,000 yojanas in width. It is submerged 84,000 yojanas in the great ocean and rises up 84,000 yojanas above the great ocean. 1. There comes a time, monks, when rain does not fall for many years, for many hundreds of years, for many thousands of years, for many hundreds of thousands of years. When rain does not fall, seed life and vegetation, medicinal plants, grasses, and giant trees of the forest wither and dry up and no longer exist. So impermanent are conditioned objects, so unstable, so unreliable. It is enough to become dissatisfied with all conditioned objects, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. 2. There comes a time when after a long time, a second sun appears. With the appearance of the second sun, the small rivers and lakes dry up and evaporate and no longer exist. So impermanent are conditioned objects, so unstable, so unreliable. It is enough to become dissatisfied with all conditioned objects, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. 3. There comes a time when after a long time, a third sun appears. With the appearance of the third sun, the great rivers, the Ganges, the Yamuna, the Acharavata, the Sarabhu, and the Maha dry up and evaporate and no longer exist. So impermanent are conditioned objects, so unstable, so unreliable. It is enough to become dissatisfied with all conditioned objects, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. 4. There comes a time when, after a long time, a fourth sun appears. With the appearance of the fourth sun, the great lakes from which those great rivers originate, Anantata, Sarahapapata, Rajakara, Kankurumanda, Kunala, Chadatta, in Mandakakina dry up and evaporate and no longer exist. So impermanent are conditioned objects, so unstable, so unreliable. It is enough to become dissatisfied with all conditioned objects, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. There comes a time when after a long time, a fifth sun appears. With the appearance of the fifth sun, the waters in the great ocean sink by 100 yojanas, 200 yojanas, 300 yojanas, 400 yojanas, 500 yojanas, 600 yojanas, 700 yojanas. The water left in the great ocean stands at the height of 7 palm trees, at the height of 6 palm trees, 5 palm trees, 4 palm trees, 3 palm trees, 2 palm trees, a mere palm tree. The water left in the great ocean stands at the height of 7 fathoms, 6 fathoms, 5 fathoms, 4 fathoms, 3 fathoms, 2 fathoms, a fathom. What a fathom is 1.8 meters. Half a fathom, up to waist height, up to the knees, up to the ankles. Just as in the autumn, when thick drops of rain are poured down, the waters stand in the hoof prints of cattle here and there. So the waters left in the great ocean will stand here and there in pools the size of the hoof prints of cattle. With the appearance of the fifth sun, the water left in the great ocean is not enough even to reach the joints of one's fingers. So impermanent are conditioned objects, so unstable, so unreliable, it is enough to become dissatisfied with all conditioned objects, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. 6. There comes a time when after a long time a sixth sun appears. With the appearance of the sixth sun, this great earth in Sunero, the king of mountains, smoke, fume, and smolder. Just as a potter's fire, when kindled, first smokes, fumes, and smolders, so with the appearance of the sixth sun, this great earth in Sunero, the king of the mountains, smoke, fume, and smolder. So impermanent are conditioned objects, so unstable, so unreliable, it is enough to become dissatisfied with all conditioned objects, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. 7. There comes a time when after a long time a seventh sun appears. With the appearance of the seventh sun, this great earth in Sunero, the king of mountains, burst into flames, blaze up brightly, and become one mass of flame. As the great earth in Sunero are blazing and burning, the flame cast up by the wind rises even to the Brahma world, heavenly realm. As Sunero is blazing and burning, as it is undergoing destruction and being overcome by a great mass of heat, mountain peaks of 100 yojanas disintegrate. Mountain peaks of 200 yojanas, 300 yojanas, 400 yojanas, 500 yojanas disintegrate. When this great earth in Sunera, the king of mountains, are blazing and burning, neither ashes nor soot are seen. Just as when ghee or oil are blazing and burning, neither ashes nor soot are seen, so it is when this great earth in Sunero, the king of mountains, are blazing and burning. So impermanent are conditioned objects, so unstable, so unreliable, it is enough to become dissatisfied with all conditioned objects, enough to become free from strong feelings towards them, enough to be liberated from them. Monks, who except those who have seen the truth would think or understand, this great earth and Sunero, the king of mountains, will burn up, be destroyed, and will no longer exist. Okay, so the Buddha is going through and giving lots of examples of impermanence here, and then ultimately he's getting to this point where he says, who except those who have seen the truth would think or understand? What he's saying is, those who except those who understand the universal truth of impermanence would ever think or understand that this great earth, and of course this mountain, will no longer exist someday, right? Like, sometimes individuals walk around and think that humanity has to be permanent and that we have to reside on this earth permanently. Well, if an individual has deeply penetrated the universal truth of impermanence, you understand everything around you is impermanent. So this earth that we're inhabiting, this planet, is not permanent. But oftentimes people think that way because the mind is craving permanence or craving permanent existence, and they think the earth is permanent, or they think that humanity is permanent, and their mind's holding on to this world and holding on to humanity. But you can let that go and realize, like, hey, of course humanity is impermanent. Of course the earth is impermanent, because everything around you is impermanent. Now, the Buddha left it as an undeclared teaching of whether the world itself is finite or infinite, but in terms of the earth itself, we know that it is impermanent, but the world is not infinite or finite. He didn't describe that. But in terms of the earth, we know that the planet itself is impermanent based on the universal truth of impermanence, that everything around us is impermanent. So let me know what questions you guys have on this chapter. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. So I'm going to move to the next one, which is 118. Here, this one is titled, Not Understanding and Not Penetrating the Four Noble Truths. Monks, just as a stick thrown up into the air falls now on its bottom, now on its top, so too as beings roam and wander on, hindered by ignorance, unknowing of true reality, and fettered by craving, Now they go from this world to the other world. Now they come from the other world to this world. For what reason? Because they have not seen the Four Noble Truths. What for? The noble truth of discontentedness, the noble truth of the cause of discontentedness, the noble truth of the elimination of discontentedness, the noble truth of the way leading to the elimination of discontentedness. Therefore, monks, an effort should be made to understand this is discontentedness. An effort should be made to understand this is the cause of discontentedness. An effort should be made to understand this is the elimination of discontentedness. An effort should be made to understand this is the way leading to the elimination of discontentedness. Monks, it is because of not understanding and not penetrating the Four Noble Truths that you and I have roamed and wandered through this long course of the cycle of rebirth. What for? It is, monks, because of not understanding and not penetrating the noble truth of discontentedness, the noble truth of the cause of discontentedness, the noble truth of the elimination of discontentedness, the noble truth of the way leading to the elimination of discontentedness, that you and I have roamed and wandered through this long course of the cycle of rebirth. That noble truth of discontentedness, monks, has been understood and penetrated. That noble truth of the cause of discontentedness has been understood and penetrated. That noble truth of elimination of discontentedness has been understood and penetrated. That noble truth of the way leading to the elimination of discontentedness has been understood and penetrated. Craving for existence has been cut off. The conduit to existence has been destroyed. Now there is no more renewed existence. So here the Buddha is giving the reason why beings continue through the cycle of rebirth, continuing to roam and wander. Of course, originally he has been sharing that it's because of ignorance and craving, which is what he's sharing here too, that hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving, this is why beings roam and wander. But ignorant of what? Unknowing of true reality of what? What are they lacking wisdom of? Well, they haven't seen the Four Noble Truths. They don't understand these four simple statements of what is the problem in the unenlightened mind, the cause, the elimination, and the path forward. So here the Buddha is saying it's because of that lack of wisdom of the Four Noble Truths and being able to fully understand and have that breakthrough to finally understanding the truth about the unenlightened mind that beings continue to roam and wander through the cycle of rebirth. But then he's saying for him, he's penetrated this. He's understood the Four Noble Truths and he's eliminated his craving for existence. It's been cut off. The conduit for existence has been destroyed. Now there is no more renewed existence. This is important to understand that when he says now there's no more renewed existence, what he's saying is there's no more rebirth in the cycle of rebirth for an individual who attains enlightenment. But he left it as an undeclared teaching of what may or may not happen to them after enlightenment and they die. That he doesn't declare once you attain enlightenment and die, what happens next? It's an undeclared teaching. We know that there's no more rebirth in the cycle of rebirth, meaning there's no existence in the cycle of rebirth. Sometimes people take that as there's no existence anywhere, but that doesn't necessarily conform or match to what the Buddha actually taught. The Buddha taught that once you get to enlightenment, yes, there's no more rebirth in the cycle of rebirth, but what may or may not come next, he left that as an undeclared teaching. So he didn't say there is something next or there isn't something next. So for a moment, let's look at why the Buddha might have done this. Because if, let's just say there is something next after enlightenment, which I'm not saying there is or there isn't, but let's just say if there is, and let's just say it's even better than what enlightenment is itself. Well, if somebody knew that in the unenlightened state, that's one more craving that they would have to eliminate in order to get to enlightenment. As long as they're craving that thing after enlightenment, they wouldn't actually be able to experience enlightenment. So they'd be stuck in this constant loop of continuing to crave that thing, and now they wouldn't ever be able to escape the cycle of rebirth. Or maybe there isn't anything after enlightenment. It doesn't really matter because by the time you get to enlightenment, your mind's so peaceful and so joyful that you won't want or crave for anything else. You'll be fully satisfied. So the teachings of the Buddha, it's not about believing a bunch of things and then hoping something good happens when you die. That's not what he did. Instead, he's giving you the guidance of how to escape the cycle of rebirth and ultimately get to that peace and joy now in this life. And you'll be able to see that your mind is gradually making your way towards that. This is one of the things that makes the Buddhist teachings very unique, is that you can learn now, you can reflect now and practice now and see the results now. And you know you're getting closer and closer to enlightenment, because in situations that where you were once angry or frustrated or agitated, you're no longer experiencing that in the same situation. And you'll know it's these teachings that have been leading to that. So you have that kind of gauge, that indicator in this life that you're headed in the right direction towards enlightenment. And by the time you get there, your mind will be so utterly peaceful that you won't care what's next. If there is anything next, you don't necessarily know. But focus on getting to enlightenment, and then you'll figure out, once you attain enlightenment and die, if there's anything next or not. But by that time, your mind is going to be so utterly peaceful, it doesn't matter. So let me know what questions you guys have on this, where the Buddha is describing that it's because beings don't understand the Four Noble Truths that they keep roaming and wandering in the cycle of rebirth. Okay, it looks like Mayu Lee has a question here. Based on what the Buddha mentioned, this earth will eventually be destroyed. What will happen to beings that are not yet enlightened? We can't speculate about that. You know, that's another teaching of the Buddha, that he says that if you tried to speculate about the world, it would just lead to madness or frustration. So if you've done the work in this life or some life prior to the destruction of the earth, then you don't need to worry about that or think about that. And I know it's kind of an interesting thing, but it's not something that the Buddha teaches. And I would just encourage you to set it aside, but because this would all just be speculation about the world. And I have a feeling that you'll do the work long before that time and you'll escape the cycle of rebirth. I know you kind of well at this point, Mayu Lee. All right. So let's go to the next chapter. I'm not seeing any other questions anywhere. This is moving into the section on enlightenment or nibbana. So we're going to be studying chapters here with that. We've got two for today, and then there's continuous ones after that for next week. So here, this one is called a simile of nibbana, enlightenment. Sariputta, I understand nibbana, enlightenment, and the path and way leading to nibbana, enlightenment. And I also understand how one who has entered this path will, by realizing for himself with direct knowledge, experience, here and now, enter upon and reside in the liberation of mind and liberation by wisdom that are taintless with the destruction of the taints, fetters. Suppose there were a pond with clean, agreeable, cool water, transparent, with smooth banks, delightful, and nearby a dense wood, and then a man scorched and exhausted by hot weather, weary, parched, and thirsty, came by a path going in one way only towards that same pond. Then a man with good sight on seeing him would say, this person so behaves, so conducts himself, has taken such a path that he will come to this same pond, and then later on he sees that he has plunged into the pond, bathed, drunk, and relieved all his distress, fatigue, and fever, and has come out again, and is sitting or lying in the woods, experiencing exclusively peaceful feelings. So too, by encompassing mind with mind, I understand a certain person thus. This person so behaves, so conducts himself, has taken such a path that, by realizing for himself with direct knowledge, experience, he here and now will enter upon and reside in the liberation of mind and liberation by wisdom that are taintless with the destruction of the taints. And then, later on, I see that by realizing for himself with direct knowledge, experience, he here and now enters upon and resides in the liberation of mind by wisdom that are taintless with the destruction of the taints and is experiencing exclusively peaceful feelings. So here the Buddha is kind of giving a little bit of an analogy for enlightenment, talking about this, you know, nice pond that somebody might bathe in and relieve all their distress and their fatigue. And you could see that somebody enters into a pond and feels very comfortable in that pond. And the Buddha is saying so too. It's the same thing with enlightenment, that when somebody's enlightened, if you understand enlightenment, you can observe that in somebody else, that somebody is experiencing this liberation of mind because they've eliminated the taints. Here he's talking about that they are taintless and destroyed the taints. That's the pollutions of mind, those 10 fetters. And the way that they did that is the liberation of mind through wisdom, by cultivating wisdom. And now, having done so, the mind is experiencing exclusively peaceful feelings, that there's no longer any kind of discontentedness whatsoever. So let me know if you guys have questions about this one. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. So we'll move to the last chapter, which is chapter 120. This one is titled, An Untaught Ordinary Person. Here, monks, an untaught ordinary person who has no regard for noble ones and is unskilled and undisciplined in their teachings, who has no regard for true men and is unskilled and undisciplined in their teachings, perceives earth as earth. One, having perceived earth as earth, he conceives himself as earth. He conceives himself in earth. He conceives himself apart from earth. He conceives earth to be mine. He excites in earth. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. Two, he perceives water as water. Having perceived water as water, he conceives himself as water. He conceives himself in water. He conceives himself apart from water. He conceives water to be mine. He excites in water. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. And then the same thing, he perceives fire as fire, perceives wind as wind, he perceives beings as beings, gods as gods, perceives Prajapati as Prajapati, Brahma as Brahma, which is the way they refer to God, perceives the gods of streaming radiance as the gods of streaming radiance, he perceives the gods of refulgent glory as the gods of refulgent glory, the gods of great fruit as the gods of great fruit, the overlord as the overlord, the base of infinite space as the base of infinite space, and just continues going on. Infinite consciousness, base of nothingness, base of neither perception nor non-perception, the seen as the seen, the heard as the heard, the sensed as the sensed, the recognized as the recognized, unity as unity, diversity as diversity, all as all. And then 24, he says, he perceives Nibbana as Nibbana, enlightenment. Having perceived Nibbana as Nibbana, he conceives himself as Nibbana. He conceives himself in Nibbana. He conceives himself apart from Nibbana. He conceives Nibbana to be mine. He excites in Nibbana. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. So what he's saying here is that somebody's clinging or craving these things, that because they're an untaught ordinary person, they don't have the wisdom of understanding the universal truth of impermanence. So they see the earth as this is mine. They excite in earth because they haven't understood that it's impermanent. The same thing with water or fire or wind or all these other things. He's saying that because beings don't understand, that they're clinging to it and they're holding on to it. The same thing with Nibbana. If they haven't understood what Nibbana is, they haven't understood the universal truth of impermanence, then they're clinging and holding on to this, and they're not going to actually be able to attain it. So it's not that I have attained enlightenment, it's the mind is experiencing enlightenment. So if you see it as I have attained Nibbana, then you ask yourself, well, where's the I? Who's the I? It's really that the mind is experiencing enlightenment. That's what's really occurring, because there's no I here. So if you cling to this I, or you cling to Nibbana, or you crave or long and yearn for it, you won't be able to attain it. So this is where it's really wise to think of it as that you're not necessarily attaining Nibbana or attaining enlightenment, because oftentimes something that you don't have, the mind chases after it and it longs and yearns for it. Instead, you can think of it as the mind is already enlightened. It's just that you've got these pollutions, these taints, these fetters, these defilements that are hindering you from being able to experience enlightenment. So when you clear out the pollution of mind, the enlightened mind will shine through more and more. And this is making a lot of sense if you start noticing that the qualities of enlightenment are peering through at different times. You can go like a couple of minutes or a couple of hours or a couple of days or weeks or a month where the mind is quite peaceful and quite joyful. And then, boom, you get a little bit of discontentedness coming in. So there you can see that the mind's already enlightened. It's just that it's kind of like looking out through this smoke, through this pollution. And sometimes the pollution clears and the mind's quite peaceful, but then the pollution comes back in. So what you're trying to do is get rid of all this pollution so there's no pollution whatsoever in the mind. And this is where now the radiance and the brightness of the enlightened mind can shine through more and more. Whereas if you think of it as you need to attain something, you might chase after it and crave it, and there you're not going to be able to attain enlightenment as long as the mind is craving for it. So you might think that you're working towards this goal, objective, or interest to clear out the pollution of mind so that you can uncover that enlightened mind that is already there and underneath of it, all of that pollution. So let me know what questions you guys have on this chapter. You can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom, or you can raise your hand in Zoom and ask any questions that you like. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. So what I'll do is just remind you guys that next week we're going to be in chapters 121 through 130. Those are the next 10 that we're going to be studying. So if you'd like to read them before class or after class, because you've got the words of the Buddha, you've got a reference to go back to the original Pali Canon to see what the Buddha was talking about before or after, if you're curious about that. And you've got the reflections from me to be able to help you understand how to glean insight and benefit to implement into your practice. The Buddha taught very clear, very concise, and very precise, but it really helps to have a teacher who understands the larger teachings and kind of the whole collection of teachings of the Buddha, because some of those chapters, they rely on you understanding other parts of the teachings of the Buddha that you may or may not have uncovered yet and been exposed to. So you can explore those chapters 121 through 130 in volume 11, either before or after class. Tomorrow in the group learning program, we're going to be studying the five hindrances and the seven factors of enlightenment. That's the very last Sunday class of the iteration of the group learning program, and I'm going to be restarting it from the very beginning on the 17th of March. And what I'm going to be doing is sharing with you the five things that will hinder you or obstruct you from getting to enlightenment, and then showing you the solutions of how to eradicate those from the mind with the seven factors of enlightenment. So you'll be able to learn that on Sunday. And then on Wednesday, we'll be doing breathing mindfulness meditation together, and I'll be open up to any and all questions that you guys might have. So thank you all for your questions. Thank you for your dedication and interest to learn and practice the teachings. We'll see you guys in a future class. Have a very wonderful and lovely rest of your day. Sawadee khap.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To provide support for this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha. To access more teachings, visit buddhadailywisdom.com. There, you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Remember to establish a daily, consistent meditation practice, along with learning and practicing these teachings. A well-developed meditation practice is the foundation in which to train the mind to attain enlightenment.